Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Stacey. How are you?
Again.
Again, right.
Yeah.
This is how we start every show.
Lately. We didn't used to start the show this way, but no, now we waste all our giggles in the pre-show.
Yeah, no. There was a long time where you would, like, start the show, like, as soon as the Skype call picked up, and for, like, the first 3 minutes of the show, I wouldn't be sure if we were, like, really chatting or really doing the show, and then all of a sudden I'd kind of have to figure out, like, oh, no, okay, Stacey really jumped into this. Okay, well, I can do it. And then I'd, like, turn on and actually be good. But the first 3 minutes of the show, I'd be, like, terrible. I guess I'd be like, are we recording right now? What? But, yeah. No, now we're so chit-chatty. We always chit-chat before we actually start.
Yeah, that's because Matt yelled at us for not having blooper material.
Bloopers. We have been providing outstanding bloopers lately.
I have to tell you, Mark Sisson, his show and his bloopers last week, but, like, top notch. I hope everybody enjoyed that.
Epic. Even when we finished that show, like, Mark hung up and we were like, was that not just the best show we've ever done? I think it kind of was. But this show could be a competitor. I'm just saying. I'm throwing
it
out there.
You feel that way because we're doing a show about your baby.
Baby number two.
You know, middle children are my favorite, so.
I'm not gonna say anything that's going to come back to haunt me about children. I'm just gonna say.
That's true. If 20 years from now my children are listening to this podcast, I love you all, honeys.
Love you all equally, and I would never pick a favorite. Although, there's certain phases that I enjoy. Maybe I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So the phase of your second book baby is about to come out into the world and be released to everybody. So super excited to have a Paleo Approach cookbook show.
I'm really, really excited. I think I've gotten past that. So like when the book went to the printer, I just hit that same kind of impatience as I used to feel like writing exams in university. And I would finish an exam and I'd want the professor to like grade it instantly because I'd want to know what my final grade was like then and there. And I'd feel this like on edge anticipation for however long it would take them to actually, you know, a week or 2 weeks or however long it took them to actually grade the exams and post the final grades. And so I kind of felt that same feeling when the book went to the printer. I was like, okay, well, now I just have to wait for it to be printed and then I have to wait to actually see it. And then I saw it and I felt sort of relief. But then I still had to wait for other people to see it and for other people to start posting reviews and start, you know, like sharing on social media and sort of sharing their impressions. And that's really nerve-wracking. I don't know if you felt that nervous with Eat Like a Dinosaur or Beyond Bacon, but for me, it feels like, you know, I've just put all of this time and effort. And, you know, for me, it was 21 months back to back because I did both books without a break in between. And so I spent nearly 2 years working on these two books. And now I just have to wait to see if people like it. And it's
people like it. Be quiet.
People love it. And it is really happy and like whole inside because it was so much effort and so much work and so much of myself went into both books. And now it's done. And the great thing is I really feel like I'm enjoying this part of the cookbook so much more than I enjoyed the Paleo Approach. I
think because you don't have another book looming too, which
right,
is refreshing.
Exactly. So I don't have this huge job that's still in my head. I'm not still in that whole, you know, tunnel vision of really like overworking myself. And I also didn't have a major health crash after the second book, which is awesome.
Awesome. In fact, you are looking so incredibly healthy lately.
Oh, thank you.
I honestly, you know, I'm a little bit jealous. You got some good stuff going on.
I have some muscles.
Yeah, and you're like radiating. Your skin looks really healthy. You're looking really, really good and happy and healthy. So
the big secret is I stopped working on a book. that's the big secret.
No, you posted a really good post today about the actual secret. I mean, you know, it's not just I stopped working on a book, but I've been
working with a functional medicine specialist, supporting my adrenal glands because I went into full adrenal burnout mode after the first book. And I've been doing hormone balancing therapy because when your adrenals burn out, your hormones tank, which was the super long sciencey geeky post that I posted was yesterday. And then,
I'm sorry. I saw it today.
It's okay. Most people always see it on the second day. It's the Facebook and its quirkiness. And then I've also been CrossFitting now for 4 months and I know, and I love it. And I've finally found that right balance of like 3 times a week plus going to open gym once a week to just make up whatever strength that I missed during the week. So I really like to get all of my, we do Wendler strength programming, and I really like to get all of that in. So if I miss strict press day, then I'll make that up on Saturdays during open gym, and I'll sort of do a warm up and I'll do mobility of whatever's kind of feeling stiff, and then I'll catch up on my strength, but I don't do any, you know, other than maybe rowing to warm up or something like that. I'm not doing like the super intense WOD. I'm just lifting some heavy stuff. And if I don't have anything to make up, then I'll find some other fun thing to lift. And that seems to be work. That's sort of like a really good amount for my body. I'm recovering from my workouts really well, and I'm sleeping really well. And I've just basically been keeping my diet really clean and, kind of practicing what I preach, I guess, finally.
So speaking of lifting heavy things and cortisol,
And cortisol, that's not a good segue.
What I was going to say is both of the AHS talks that you and I gave are posted on the internets now. So if you want to hear about Stephanie Gaudreau and I lifting heavy things and why we think that's beneficial for your health, you can go do that on YouTube. You can find links in our social media or on the blog post recap of AHS.
You can also make sure that we put...
in the show notes. And the one of you and I talking about... It's kind of a different spin on the post that you wrote yesterday, but the HPG, HPA, and HPT axis and all those hormone things are also posted as well with that link in the show notes. But
and then my other talk that I gave on how lifestyle factors directly impact gut health is also up there.
You weren't done talking.
Well, no, because you segued into our talks at AHS and you totally took me off guard because I thought you were going to segue into your competition yesterday.
No, okay, so we've been talking for a really long time. I think we should bring our guests on so that we're not completely tardy.
Are you trying to not talk about your competition yesterday?
I may or may not be blushing.
All right, let's bring on our guests. We have Elena from Grazed and Enthused and Jamie from Gutsy by Nature. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Welcome, ladies.
So, Stacey, are you really not going to talk about your competition yesterday?
It's fine. I'll talk about my competition. I did some retail therapy today. It's fine. I'm super hyper competitive. And despite the fact that I haven't been sleeping and I haven't been eating the way that I know that I should to perform my best, and the fact that I had a competition a couple of weeks ago and I haven't been training for this competition, I had convinced myself that I was going to not only win this thing, but I was going to win it by a landslide and I wouldn't even have to try hard. And I like had all these, you know, cocky ego things going on in my head, and it totally, got me. Like I got a big smack across the face yesterday. So, I tied for first place. Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of paleoparents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio. Decisions that I made that just because I was feeling so confident in it and I wasn't worried about it, that clearly caught up with me. And so I'm just, it's not that I'm not wanting to talk about it so much as I'm just kind of disappointed in myself, and there's not much to talk about other than, you know, I learned a lesson. I am really super, I think the right decision was made for the other girl that won the contest. She was amazing, and we tied for first place, but there's five events, and it's a total point system like CrossFit competitions are. So the person who has the most first place finishes wins, and she had three and I had two. So she totally deserved it. She was amazing. She's like this really tall, lean person who I could not believe the amount of strength feats that she was doing, and with such speed. Like, she was super, super speedy while doing it. So it was good. It was a good, you know, lesson for me. I still got an invitation to nationals from it, which means I got two invitations to nationals with one year of competing in the sport. Tying for first is not something to not be proud about. You know, it's a terrible lesson to teach my kids that I'm disappointed in tying for first, but it is what it is. You know, I don't know.
You just wanted to be like the best by a landslide.
I did. I wanted to win first in every single event.
You were the best by tied with someone else who was awesome too.
Yeah.
And it's still like a huge, awesome deal that you did so well, Stacey.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Moving on.
I know you don't believe me, but you are awesome.
Thank you. I'm sure I'll talk more about it.
Hence my new hashtag, Strong Like Stacey. Have you seen me use this hashtag?
I knew that hashtag existed, but I haven't been checking it lately. I'll have to check it out.
I'm just saying, it may or may not be me who created it.
I haven't been able to keep up with Instagram lately, as I just referenced. I'm a little bit busy lately. And I've been having a hard time keeping up with email. Usually I Instagram while I'm going to the bathroom, as interesting as that is. But lately I've been having to email while I go to the bathroom. So, yeah. And
I am now expecting, like, Instagram shots of your feet.
No, fortunately, I've never blundered in that capacity. But what I was going to say is, I'm sure I'll talk more about it on Strong Woman Radio because Viv was there, and I'm sure Viv will give me a verbal lashing about all the mistakes that I made and also that I shouldn't be so disappointed. But have you listened to that podcast, by the way?
In my ample spare time, no.
Well, you just talked about how much you enjoy lifting heavy things, and that is the podcast for ladies who like to lift heavy things, so you better listen to it.
I should maybe download it and make them play it at my box during the WODs.
I don't know. It's not very family friendly.
I don't think there's lots of people who swear across the box in the middle of WODs, including me for the first time during a workout this
week.
It takes
a lot to get you to curse.
I know. It was slam ball burpees.
Yeah.
And those were not my friend. And I did scream pretty loudly some not polite words right at the end. It was hard. That's my excuse. That's like the worst excuse ever. Oh well. I felt good when it was all done, though.
Ladies, do you CrossFit or lift heavy things?
I lift heavy things. Well, heavy for me.
Well, that is the definition of heavy. I think yes.
I started listening to Strong Woman last week, and I added 10 pounds onto my back squat yesterday morning.
Sweet.
And couldn't get out of bed this morning, even though it was only 10 pounds. But I thought of you, Stacey.
Well, it was more than 10 pounds total, I'm sure. So that means you're doing it right when your muscles are recovering.
A whopping 70 pounds.
That's just awesome,
like,
though.
As much as I weigh, so I guess
there
that's
you
not
go. That's when you think of it as percent body.
I was going to say, that's like.
Changes the picture.
Plus percent of total weight. That's like, you know. Almost 10% or something.
Also, remember, when you're squatting, you're also squatting your body weight plus the weight that's on your shoulders.
Like, yeah, good point. Good
point. Which is why I cannot do a pull-up.
I want to be able to do a pull-up.
Yeah, me too. Okay, are we done talking about that? Can we move on and never talk about it again?
Yes, we can. I just felt that it was a pretty big thing, and I think you mentioned that you were training for it before.
I did. And it was a wonderful, very well-run event, and the vendors who supported it were amazing and fantastic. The prize packages for people, they said that they'd never seen prize packages like that before in a strongman competition, and I'm going to do a recap post for everyone once my emotions have simmered down a little bit, and I'll talk about why I picked the vendors that I did and asked them to sponsor it and all of the things that, you know, I use and love, like I did with the first competition in March. So I will definitely be doing all of that. I mean, it's been 24 hours. I'm still a little, like, I'm totally mentally and emotionally tanked. So let's talk about you.
I'm excited to talk about my book. Can I say I'm excited to talk about my book?
I'm excited to talk about your book. Okay, so let me tell people, because you'll get to the bloopers and you'll hear it. I just want to defend myself a little bit and say that Sarah says that I have not adequately checked out her book, tested it. So she's brought on these two experts that have tested it the most, which is awesome. But I want to say that in my own defense, I totally reviewed your book before it was out. I was one of the very few people that saw the book in full PDF format before it went to the printer, both on purpose and on accident. And I genuinely gave a very passionate quote about the cookbook, because I think that you have gone above and beyond in doing some really innovative things in this cookbook that the community has either been asking for or didn't even know that they needed, with things like, you know, nutritional information and going beyond just kind of the macros, which I think is really fantastic, especially for the message that you're trying to drive home. And for me in particular, I was really impressed with the way that you made things be non-traditional paleo baked goods, i.e. there aren't obviously any nuts or eggs in your book. And for me, when I went AIP, and I was doing strict AIP following your approach in the beginning, like the thing that I needed was this cookbook, because I, even as a person who ran a paleo food blog, had no idea how to come up with alternatives other than what I had used as a baseline for so long. And the fact that you have, you know, alternative foods and recipes to serve as flours, like, for example, everyone knows that you have plantain pancakes. Like, I had no idea that plantains could become pancakes. Like, who? I have no idea. But you've gone way above and beyond in the cookbook in terms of, you know, the types of flours and things that you're using to make what are, you know, amazing AIP foods that I would have, you know, I would have probably given up a limb for some of those foods at the beginning of AIP. Like, I remember tantruming and crying in the car and being so overwhelmed at the lack of food choices that I felt like I had. And I feel like, you know, with your book, hopefully no one ends up feeling that way, because if they plan ahead and prep, then they will be totally set. So there, for the record, I have looked at your book and I like your book and I gave you a quote for your book. So there. I like this niece or nephew just as much as the first.
I appreciate that. So to be fair, I guess people will hear it in the bloopers now. Where that conversation started was not me trying to accuse Stacey of not looking at my book.
Yes, it was.
There's Instagram evidence of her taking a nap with it. So clearly she loves it a lot. But it was more because I asked Elena and Jamie to come on the show, not because we've ever met, because we haven't, but because I've been watching them on Instagram, like, cook their way through this cookbook. And I felt like the best possible people to talk about, you know, the merits of this book are people who've been using it and who have, you know, already a lot of experience with it. And I also was very taken especially, well, with both of your reviews, but Elena wrote, I think, the best line of any book review I've ever read, and it was about my book. And I was like, I called people to read them that review, and I left the page up on my phone. And as I just walked around my day, I'm like, I have to read you this line from this review that was posted last night. And Elena, do you remember the line?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think you're the expert on it now.
So, I mean, it was like the fifth paragraph or something, because, you know, the first thing you talked about, which rightly so, was more like the content of the book. But then you were talking about sort of the graphic layout and the visual layout. And you were basically saying that the book is beautiful to look at, which I appreciate very much because a lot of effort went into that. But you said it was as though George Clooney was wearing an apron and nothing else, serving you oysters on the half shell on the Amalfi Coast. And I was like, that is just the greatest image ever. I think it might be overstating the beauty of the book slightly. but I just loved that imagery. And so I've quoted it a lot just because it's like the awesomest line ever.
I appreciate it. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful book. I'm looking at your cream of broccoli soup recipe right now. And something I really like about the book are all the pictures of you, actually, because you don't often get to see pictures of the authors in their cookbooks. And you're there like using the food. It looks like
I really love her making the sausage. Have you seen that?
Yes. Oh my God. I just turned to that. Yeah. It's
I look really intense in that picture.
That was the first page. That was the first page I opened to.
Oh, that's right. Because you posted that on Instagram. And
yeah.
I was like, oh no, that's the first page.
We have a photo of Matt like that when we made sausage for Beyond Bacon. And we decided that it was totally inappropriate. And we were like, we cannot do this. No, this is just wrong.
It's so surprisingly hard to take a picture of stuffing sausage and make it not look ridiculously sensual.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And because it was Matt, it was like, no, we can't use this shot.
You do have a shot, though, isn't it, of you making sausage in Beyond Bacon, like from behind?
I don't think so.
Yeah. No, there is. There's a shot of it.
You're going to pull out the book, I know. You've got this freakish memory. Let's just focus on you today.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's there. I will find it later.
I'm sure
your
will.
Your book is not within arm's reach, and I'm tethered to my computer.
Hopefully you'll forget by the end. So what recipes have you guys made out of the book so far? Because I haven't been following the Paleo Approach Cookbook hashtag to know all of the recipes that have been made by you guys.
Yeah, this is Elena. I think Jamie and I have been dominating that hashtag.
Well, evidently, not you think. You have been. That's why you're here. Sarah picked you as the super all-stars.
Yeah, so this morning I rolled out of bed, and pretty much every morning the first thing I think about is meat. So I ran to my Paleo Approach cookbook and turned to the garlic and rosemary roast beef. And it was so simple to stick in the oven. It was ready in 10 minutes in the oven for an hour and a half. And then when I got back from my walk, it was all done. I sliced it thinly, and that's been what I've been eating all day. But we've done the teriyaki poached trout, the whole carrot tabbouleh, the plantain crackers. I think my favorite so far has been the bacon bison liver pate.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Man, I'm going to have to eat that then.
Oh, it's so good. There's cognac in it, people. For those of you that don't get to imbibe anymore, you can burn off the alcohol and pretend you're still drinking.
Carrot tabbouleh. I remember looking at that one and thinking that I needed to try it. Was it good?
Oh, it's delicious. It uses the carrot tops.
Oh, like the Sarah's so smart.
I know. I don't like throwing that stuff away, so I was so excited she repurposed it.
For real?
Well, and they taste so similar to parsley.
I would have never known.
Well, clearly, when you go shopping, you don't eat random green things out of your basket while you're shopping.
That's why I have you, because I could just ask you. And then you said teriyaki poached fish?
Yeah, poached trout, which, Sarah, I think I told you this. I'm not quite sure, but it was so smart. So you are marinating the fish in the saucepan that you're going to cook it in. So it saves you a dish, and it's super simple to throw together. We've made it two nights in a row. I sent the recipe to my mom. She's been making it. It's like five ingredients maybe, and absolutely delicious.
That is
I might
smart.
Have a second
that...
dinner and go to Whole Foods and go get some more trail right now.
It works really well, by the way. It works really well with salmon, too.
That's Sarah.
Yeah, I haven't tried it with salmon yet. I've done some rockfish and rainbow trout.
When I originally developed the recipe, I developed it with salmon. And then when the book was in editing, my editor says, you have so many salmon like dishes in your seafood chapter. Like, maybe you should just cut one out. I was like, no, I can't cut one out. I can do it again with a different kind of fish. And that one, I was like, I kind of wanted to try trout recipe anyway. So I tried it with trout. I was like, oh, that works like really well. That's even better. But it is still, it's very good with salmon too, which for some people can be, salmon, I think, depending on the time of year and where you live, can be a little bit cheaper too than trout.
Yeah, I got my trout on sale at Whole Foods. But yeah, I served it with the bacon braised Savoy cabbage and apple. So that was...
That's one of the first recipes I developed for the book too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was one of
bacon, cabbage, and apple is never a bad combination.
No, it's always a good idea. And that's, I mean, I've been pretty much eating all these meals. I haven't had to even use my own creativity to make any recipes the past 2 weeks, which is awesome.
You made the breakfast brew too, right?
Oh, I've been making that every morning. And I've been blending it in my Vitamix with, it's kind of like bulletproof style because I'm using coconut oil. I haven't reintroduced ghee yet. So it's mostly just been coconut oil, a little lucuma powder, cinnamon, and then sometimes homemade coconut milk. And I'll just whir that up in the blender, and it's delicious.
All right, what's lucuma powder?
Lucuma, it's like a fruit. I'm not quite sure what region it's from. I think South America. But it's dehydrated, and it's like a low-sugar, low-glycemic sugar replacement for – it's usually recommended for people with diabetes, but I don't eat any sugar at all, even honey. So it just adds like a little sweetness when you need it. Nevita, I think, is the brand that makes it, and I can get it at online and on Amazon, Whole Foods, and some like local specialty stores.
Stacey, I have not researched it.
I was just gonna say, Sarah, why haven't you talked about this before?
I don't know, because I am generally skeptical of all low glycemic sugars.
I like that she said it's from a whole.
It's like a pulverized dried fruit almost.
Okay, Sarah, I expect a Science with Sarah on this in the near future.
Do it, because I've been eating it like nonstop for the past.
All right, I'm writing a post-it note about it right now.
What damage am I doing?
You are going to be so mad if I come
back.
Well,
actually, I would love for us to address, just to maybe do a you're going to give me the death stare, but now that you're done with books, I think we should do a podcast on diabetes, both type 1 and type 2, so maybe you can roll it in with that. If it's recommended for people with diabetes, you could postulate whether or not that's a truism.
Yeah, okay. It's a couple grams of sugar per 2 teaspoons, I think.
It might just be high in inulin fiber, which is kind of sweet. But I'll look into it. I think a diabetes show is a good idea.
Yeah, sweet. It has a nice like soft caramel flavor to it.
That might mean it's high in fructose. I'll look into it. I'll look into it.
Thank you, scientist.
Okay, so what about Jamie?
I am so amazed Elena has made all those recipes. I feel like I'm slacking here. So the first one that I made, like literally the day I got the book on my lunch hour, I'm fortunate that I can work from home some days. So I was the day I was working from home, but still I only have so much time. I made the Hargo-inspired shrimp balls, which were incredible. I love
that you
those.
Made like a legit recipe and not just like a quick salad or something on your lunch break.
No, I mean, it's seriously like, I think she put in here that the prep time, she says 20 minutes. And I think I said this in my review, like it only takes 20 minutes if it takes your oven that long to preheat.
I think you did say that.
Seriously, it was like no time at all. You know, it's like the raw shrimp, a little bit of other stuff goes into a food processor, chop up some bamboo shoots, form them into balls and bake them, and they were incredible. They tasted just like I remembered from dim sum, and I never thought I would eat that again. So those were awesome.
It may or may not have been inspired by a lifelong addiction to dim sum that I have.
I love dim sum. I miss it. So this was fantastic.
There's also a similar recipe called pot sticker meatballs, which takes...
Oh, I made those.
You made everything.
I know. I'm telling you, I'm going all like Julie and Julia on you. Me and Jamie can do it.
This would be so awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pot sticker meatballs too. That's another one that would take like no time to make at all.
No, those were super easy to make.
Yeah, meatballs in general are such an underutilized protein in the paleo community, I think, because so many people just make regular ground beef meatballs with tomato sauce and get burned out on it. But because you can make such affordable versions of things, like you could get, you know, super small shrimp that are more affordable and make shrimp balls or whatever, you know, and then you can afford the wild cod and all that kind of stuff. But even things like, you know, bison and lamb and all those things, everything's cheaper when it's ground. And so if you can come up with inventive ways to flavor and serve it, that's the fun thing. So good job, Sarah. Now I want dim sum.
Yeah, Sarah,
I want
your dim sum meatballs. Again. Sarah, how many meatballs do you have in here? Like 4 or 5? Including the wonton soup.
Oh yeah. So there's the shrimp, I guess we're calling the shrimp ones meatballs. And then there's pot sticker meatballs. And then there's the wonton soup, which basically ditches the wonton wrappers and just makes meatballs out of the filling. And then there's like a Swedish meatball that uses ground heart and ground liver. And
yummy.
Yeah, no, it's like low enough liver to really hide it. I think
I made the 50-50-50 burgers too with the bacon.
I love those. And my kids.
The liver. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. My kids eat that up like it's going out of style.
I love that in your blog post of that, you reference us as the inspiration. Like, these are so good. I just added some extra nutrients.
I try to, whenever I can remember what my inspiration for a recipe actually was, to give full credit. Sometimes I can't really remember. Like, I just saw something on Pinterest. By the time I actually get around to doing it, I'm like, I don't know whose recipe that was, but that gave me this idea to do this. But yeah, I mean, I know that 50-50 burgers are a thing, but I didn't know that before I saw your post about them. So I was like, grinding up bacon, mixing it with ground beef? That's genius. What if
I like your math on that one too. I don't think 33 burgers sounds as appetizing.
It does not sound as good. And I just thought, you know what? It's okay if there's 3 halves. It's fine.
Well, and plus if you did 33, I would be the geek that would be like, what's the one left over?
I'd have to write it like 33.3 with a little bar over the 3. It's like 3 forever. And then it would just be, then how would you actually say that? 33 1/3, 33 1/3, 33 1/3.
Oh, okay, so while we have interrupted Jamie, which I promise we'll get back to you, and we're on the subject of inspiration, I want to mention that one of the unique things that I've noticed in your book that I've never seen in a paleo cookbook before, and maybe this is because I haven't been reading them closely enough, but I don't think it's very common anywhere, is the fact that you took recipes from Russ Crandall, the domestic man, and it's Matt's recipe. And you said, I cannot improve upon these and they have to be in my cookbook because they're the best. And you put pork rinds, we called them crocklins, but I think you called them pork rinds.
I called them pork rinds, yeah.
And Russ's AIP flatbread, which he made for you and I when we went on the book tour to Baltimore, no, Annap, where were we? Alexandria and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And we stayed with Russ overnight. And you put those two recipes in the book and said as much in the book, like, listen, you guys have to eat these things. I didn't make them, but you have to eat them.
I did. I gave full credit. For Russ, I even used his photo. And I called the recipe Russ's flatbread. So for the pork rinds, there's the story. I had made pork rinds for the book, and I had made them using the baked technique, which is quite different. And they were delicious, but my mom was visiting and she was eating them. She was like, someone's going to break their teeth on these. And I was like, but you just have to chew them really, you know, like chew them at the back of your mouth or something. She's like, no, Sarah, these are like, the ones where the skin had been a little bit thinner were fine, but then wherever the skin was thicker, and you don't really have control when you're buying pork skin exactly how thin or thick the skin is. The ones where it was thicker, they were really crunchy. And so when I was reviewing Beyond Bacon, or maybe it was even after I posted my review, but it was one of the recipes I did, was the pork rinds, in spite of the fact that it is this like much more involved process. And I was like, really like, no, I like my, that it's only in the oven for an hour and a half and it's really fast thing. But then they were amazing and they were not going to break anybody's teeth. And so I had this like, well, I can't just copy Stacy's recipe because that's not cool, especially because they know me and they'd probably call me out on it. So I asked your guys' permission to basically include a slightly simplified version of it because your recipe in your book has some seasonings that are not AIP friendly. And when I make them at home, I make them with just salt because they're amazing anyways with just salt. And then with Russ, I had been working on a flatbread recipe on and off for months. And I had his flatbread recipe at his house. I was like, dang, this is like what I've been trying to create. This is like, I can't, this is perfect. I can't do better. And so I asked Russ's permission if I could use his recipe. And those are the only two recipes from outside blogs that are actually in the book. But it just became, I don't know, it was important for me to have those recipes in here because I really feel like they're quality of life recipes. And I couldn't do any better. So I stole, with permission, your guys' recipes.
I don't think you stole. I think my point was to say that I think it's true to your nature of delivering like the absolute best that you can for your readership with integrity, that you didn't try to, you know, slightly change one or two of the ingredients and call it your own recipe or whatever, that, you know, you gave credit and those recipes are good and you like them. And so you wanted to share them with your audience so that they would know about them too. So I think it's super cool. I was just pointing it out as something.
Thank you.
And clearly you were not lacking ideas. I mean, you could have chosen to not include them at all because you have what, like 8,000 recipes?
207.
So clearly if you hadn't included those, you still would add 205. I think you'd probably been okay.
I know, but they're quality of life recipes.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point, is you really created a lot of different recipes that are quality of life. So speaking of which, Jamie, what recipes did you make that improved your quality of life?
Improved my quality of life. Well, like Elena said earlier, I also wake up thinking about what I'm going to eat. And usually since I started doing AIP, it's become leftovers, you know, from the night before. So that's been really cool this last week and a half or so, because I've had awesome leftovers in the refrigerator. So for my last two breakfasts and dinner the night before, I had the, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but the kufu, yeah, which are ripe plantains. I've had mofongo before and heard of that, but I'd never heard of anybody doing it with ripe plantains. And, oh my God, that's awesome. That is so good. Another super, super easy recipe. So I think that's one of the things I really love about this cookbook when I think about recommending it to other people, because I talk to so many people who are like, I need to do something with my diet. I need to eat a different way. I'm going to try this, but I don't cook. Like, I don't know how to cook. And so I think the fact that you have recipes in here that sound super intimidating when you look at the title, but then when you actually like start to make them, you realize it's like four or five ingredients, takes 10 minutes. You explain it really well. And then at the same time, there also are some really, really kind of gourmet recipes too. So there's something in here for everybody. So there's, whether you're brand new to the kitchen or you're a skilled cook, but just new at eating in this way, doing AAP, I think that there's something in here for everyone. And anyway, the kufu or the kafu or however
I think it's kufu.
It.
That's the way I say it. I might be saying it wrong too, but that's
well,
what
we'll just
saying.
We'll just say kufu and somebody can tell us if we're wrong. But delicious. And it was super, super, super good for breakfast. It was like just
that
perfect.
Would be good. I want to make some now so I can have it for breakfast.
I just took it out of the refrigerator and then I like, because, you know, there's like bacon and fat in it, so it didn't need any extra grease. I just sort of fried it like a little fritter. It was incredible.
Oh, that's very innovative. And now I'm all excited.
Now I feel like I need to go to the store and get a whole bunch of plantains.
I actually had to go to the store special because the plantains I had at home weren't ripe. And I was like, I've got to do this.
So have to wait so long for plantains to ripen at home. Yeah, I wait until like the store will have, they'll be so ripe, they'll think no one will buy them. And so they'll have them like on the discount, like, you know, five of them taped together for 25 cents. And that's when I make Khufu. It's like, oh, look, you know, like this huge pile of ripe plantains for almost no money. I think I really like what you said about the recipes, you know, most of them being very, very simple, but they're still being gourmet dishes. I think that really represents sort of how I cook. So like on a day-to-day basis, I cook very simply, and I tend to just use a few ingredients, and I tend to do things that aren't really time consuming. But then when I want to do a treat or I have company, I always sort of use that excuse to do something more involved. And so there's a few recipes that are, you know, fairly involved, like the lobster bisque, which is one of the most amazing things I've ever eaten. You know, it takes 4 hours, and it's not just 4 hours of simmering. There's quite a lot of work involved in making it. It's worth every minute. But the majority of the recipes are just, I don't know, the idea is to make food yummy, but not hard, like to make it easy for people to figure out what they can cook and figure out what they're going to eat, make it easy, make it affordable, and show people that food still gets to be really delicious. And so, you know, I wanted to have some of those more sort of sophisticated flavors and those more involved dishes, but I definitely didn't want that to be, you know, by any means the majority of the recipes.
Well, and I think that's really key too in not just the success of like how a busy person cooks, but in the concept of what your book is designed to do, which is help people with autoimmune conditions. I mean, I know from the kind of mail that we get through the Paleo View or when I've done a signing with you, the kind of people who come through aren't healthy people who can stand on their feet cooking for a long period of time. And I don't mean that in any sort of like negative or derogatory way, but for a lot of the people, they are reclaiming their health with the Paleo approach. And so if you're going to write a cookbook for the Paleo approach, I don't think it would be reasonable to have an entire, you know, book of 200 recipes that are long and involved and difficult. People with arthritis can't be, you know, standing up and chopping and doing all kinds of things for a long period of time. So I think, you know, the idea that, you know, you have for kind of time-saving techniques and different ways of getting ahead, like doubling a dish and then, you know, having it later or reusing things or, you know, whatever, I think are really helpful for people who are oftentimes exhausted or physically in pain and trying to, you know, add something to their list. If they've been buying carryout for a really long time, if now they're going to try to do this, doing it in the most efficient and easy way is going to help them succeed. You know, like it's not going to help them succeed if it's too difficult and they give up. So I think it's important that you have those quick, simple, easy, but still tasty dishes, which is the majority of them.
And this is Jamie, by the way, but I think too, there's a lot of mental fatigue that happens too, where you just, at least I can speak for myself.
When I would agree.
Went on to AIP like a year ago. I was so overwhelmed with information and of all the things I can't eat and the small list it seemed that there was that I can eat. I just really would have love to have had this book then. I'm sure you hear that all the time.
But
to have like somebody just take over for me, like the meal plans is what I'm thinking about here. Like, okay, here's my list. Go to the grocery store, buy all this stuff, and then go through and cook it. And it's like, you know, when you're healthy, when I'm healthy, I don't want somebody to tell me what to eat. But when I'm not feeling well, either mentally or physically or both, it is so nice to just sort of turn that over. And I think that's why so many people eat takeout all the time and stuff like that, is because they don't know how to make the decision. So they've sort of just abdicated that to someone else. And that's the nice thing about the way your book is set up, is that they can kind of do that but still be very healthy if they just follow the meal plans.
Thank you.
Truth.
And then the other thing I love about the book is that once you're beyond that stage and you start to get into the like geekiness about it, where you get to like where I'm at, where you're like, oh, I want to know about all the nutrients I'm getting and I really want all that information. I think it is so awesome that it's all right there. I've never seen that in a cookbook before, where you just, you know, look at the recipe, what you're going to eat, and it's like everything is listed, and not just the normal, like, you know, crappy nutrition facts that are on, you know, the bottle of whatever. It's got everything on here. So like if I'm looking to increase like how much magnesium I take in, I can see that. And I love that too. So it's like kind of spans that whole range of how you get started with AIP and then get excited about it and really get into the nutrition part of it.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fun way of, you know, helping people make decisions about what they might want to make. You know, I think a lot of us in the autoimmune community have diagnosed micronutrient deficiencies. And so we'll go like, well, you know, I'm deficient in, you know, zinc is really common. Like, so what recipe can I make that's going to have a lot of zinc? But it was also a way of sort of reinforcing the concept of nutrient density first, and yeah, nutrient density being the most important thing. And I basically put in every single nutrient that was available from the USDA database. So, I mean, I think, did I leave anything out? I left out cholesterol because I don't want people to be looking at dietary cholesterol.
Well, that's
the only thing I left out.
That's, I mean, one of the things that I mentioned at the beginning was about the full label, not just the macros. And what I meant was exactly what you just said, Sarah, which I think kind of brings the message full circle of what you're saying in the paleo approach about how very important consumption of nutrient dense foods is. And I think for a lot of people, not just with autoimmune conditions, but paleo in general, are really micronutrient deficient. I mean, when we had the Coltons on, remember when they did the evaluation of the regular paleo meal plans that were available at the time and how micronutrient deficient they were. And I think, well, not I think.
I should totally have them do an evaluation.
You said you were going to, so this is my reminder. Yeah. But this just brings it full circle now to show that, you know, if you take a look at the nutrient-dense foods that Sarah and I now advocate, but specifically in the paleo approach, you're going to see how much more micronutrient-rich those foods are. And it's nice to have it in your face as a reminder, like, oh yeah, I need to eat these kinds of foods. And if, you know, you're doing a Jules and Julia thing with it, you can be like, oh, I've had a lot of iron this week. Maybe I could focus on a couple more.
You'll get stuck, just like she gets stuck with all the aspics at the end. What would you get stuck with? What would you get stuck with? All of the liver recipes at the end? Oh.
That's what I'd get stuck with. I love, like, organ meats as being really helpful for you, but I have a couple of, like, go-to recipes, and I just use them exclusively because I can't pellet the idea of even trying something new with the idea that it might not work, because I've tried so many failed, not yours, but so many, like, failed organ meat recipes, and I'm just like, I can't. I don't want to waste it. I don't want to be disappointed. So it's good to know that the bacon bison pate, is that what you said what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to know that one's been tested and approved, because that makes me feel a little more comfortable. There are a couple on the internet that people have said were good, and I won't name names or specific recipes, and I tried them, and it was like cat food. And I was like, nope, not happening.
I don't think any of my recipes taste like cat food. Unless it's my recipe for cat food, but I didn't include that in the book.
And then to the thought of thinking about this book being for people who are new to AIP and maybe have not read anything else or learned much about it, I think it's fantastic that you include, like, why did you say, like, 100 pages of other stuff?
Yeah.
That explains not only the kind of details of what this diet is, what you can eat, what you can't eat, the gray areas, but it also gives you some really great cooking tips. So I think that it's perfect for somebody who's new to this, whether they're new to cooking completely or they're just new to AIP. It's going to give them the foundation that they need, and then they can dive into the meal plans. I think I also wanted to make sure I pointed out that, because I get this a lot since I have Crohn's disease and get a lot of people who come to my site about looking for low FODMAP foods and are also doing AIP, that you have both like a two-page spread of FODMAP or a two-page spread of substitutions, including FODMAP substitutions. But then on the recipes themselves, you say which ones can be modified, which ones can't. And then if it doesn't say anything, that they already are safe, which I think is fantastic because there's a real hunger out there for people who have digestive issues and need that information. So I loved that part of it as well.
Thank you. It was actually really important to me, I think, because the paleo approach is so sciencey. And I knew when I wrote it that there was going to be a group of people who could benefit from that information, but who either, you know, weren't going to be able to, you know, focus well enough to read the book. You know, we know that things like brain fog and, you know, extreme fatigue are symptoms of, you know, a majority of autoimmune diseases. So they weren't either going to be able to really focus on that, or, you know, some people just aren't interested, and that's totally fine. Like, I knew that that book was not going to be for everybody. And it's been awesome that it's helped so many people, and, you know, that doctors are starting to recommend it to their patients. And it's really helped empower a lot of people and helped them talk to their doctors about diet and lifestyle. But I always knew that there was going to be people who just didn't want to know the whys. They just want to get told what to do. And so what I tried to do was summarize the major, at least the diet points from the paleo approach in a way that was just that, like, just tell me what to do. Like, I'll do it. I know, like, but just give me the rules. Give me what I'm supposed to do.
Well, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think you just told people what to do. I think you did give a why, but you gave a why in a very, like, easily digestible and understandable way that most people, maybe not most people, but for a lot of people, that's what they really care about is, like, okay, tell me what to do, and then why does that work?
I gave a very broad overview of the whys. That was very, it was just very general. So it was very much, you know, we eat this way because it supports gut health. We eat this way because it, you know, helps regulate the immune system, because nutrients are required for the immune system to function normally. It was, you know, I think that sort of more sciencey part of the book was maybe 3 or 4 pages compared to 400 pages. And that got really into much more of the practical stuff. So it was like food lists. What can I eat? You know, what about food quality? What about where do I get this food? How do I manage time in the kitchen? You know, the second chapter, I basically took everything I liked from every cookbook I'd ever read and had something, you know, and used that as inspiration for that chapter. So it was, you know, I love that my Good Housekeeping cookbook had cooking guides for cooking different cuts of meat and how long it would take per pound.
Oh, that was so smart. That was one of my favorite things that you did, is you had like the cuts of all the different animals and you talked about that. And I was like, God, we should have done that. That's so smart.
Thanks, man. It was because of my Good Housekeeping cookbook that I love so much.
Yeah,
that
I don't still have that one, obviously.
Even though I can probably make 4 of the recipes out of the entire book now, I like don't want to give it away because it's got so much like basic information like that. That's, you know, it's one of the non-paleo cookbooks that I go to the most. So I basically like took all of those kinds of things that I liked from the intro chapters and different cookbooks and, you know, made it. Clearly I didn't plagiarize it. I made it my own. But sort of put all of that into one place because that was how I learned to cook. I learned to cook by following recipes and reading, you know, the intro materials, reading the like tips. And then I learned to cook by sometimes goofing up and having to improvise, or like getting halfway through a recipe and realizing I'd done a step wrong, or that I was missing an ingredient. I thought I'd read all the ingredients. I thought I had everything, but I didn't really. And what am I going to do now? And so I tried to kind of make a resource that would be like that for other people, because of how many people are, you know, trying to change their diet and they don't have a lot of experience in the kitchen. So it kind of helps, I think, to, I don't know, level the playing field a little bit, because there's still, you know, I've heard from other people who say, you know, even though they were an experienced cook, they still found a lot of those tips useful. But it kind of is, the idea is to make, you know, all of these other changes that we're supposed to be doing to heal our bodies from autoimmune disease, to make it as unintimidating and approachable as possible. So that was the motivation behind 100 pages of information before you get to the recipes. Well,
good job, lady.
And this is Jamie again. I think that I imagine there will be a lot of people who will get this book first and get really jazzed by it, start cooking from it, and then want to learn more and go back and get the first book.
I think you're probably right. I think, and that's okay. Yeah. To me, you know, as much as I want people to buy my books because that's like good for me, you know, I really think it's more important that people get that information. And I hope that these books make it, you know, a really useful way to have that information in people's homes so that they can actually, you know, take charge of their health. And if that means that one person does better with one book and not the other, or one person buys one book first and then the other one, or the other one book, you know, first, I think we know that so many different things work for different people. So I think that's fine.
Well, and I think what's nice about them as a pair is that if you found the paleo approach overwhelming or dense, or you had brain fog and couldn't do it, the paleo approach cookbook will kind of condense it down for you. And then if there's a place where you want more information on something, then you can use the paleo approach as, Sarah, you kind of intended, which is as a research book. You know, you can go and look up the specific things associated with that item that maybe piqued your curiosity.
There's a few places in the cookbook where it says, like, if you want to know more, here's where to find it in the paleo approach. Like, here's where to find that particular explanation. And it was actually really liberating to have already done that work and explained the whys and be able to just be like, okay, now this is what we do. If you want to know why, you've already got this resource to go read. And it was, there was a number of places where I was like, oh no, do I have to explain this? No, I don't. Yay. it was nice to have sort of already done that mountain of work.
Awesome. Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have any final thoughts? And can you remind our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, this is Elena at Graysman Foods. You can find me on my website, graysmanfoods.com, or facebook.com/graysmanfoods, or Instagram, same name, Graysman Foods. So pretty easy to find. I post about 3 new recipes a week. Most of them are AIP, but I have readers that are just plain old paleo as well.
Very cool.
And this is Jamie. I'm at Gutsy by Nature. You can find my blog there at www.gutsybynature.com. I don't know if people say that www anymore, but I'm old fashioned. And also,
Sarah and I are as well. It shows our age.
I didn't think it was weird until you said it. Yeah.
I'm older than both of you. So the same name, Facebook, Instagram. I love Instagram. I'm completely addicted. I'm like on there all the time. My husband makes fun of me. Twitter, although I'm hardly ever on there, but you know, Gutsy by Nature everywhere. And that's it.
Awesome.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. I know, like, especially because I've never met you guys before, and I just like sent you guys emails, be like, hey, you want to come on the podcast? And you guys were both so excited and so willing. And that, you know, means a lot to me. And I'm so happy to see you guys using my book and enjoying it. And I just want to say thank you for like all of your support, like through this whole process. It's been really awesome.
Thank you.
Good job, Sarah.
Thanks, man, Stacy. All right. So I think that's a wrap.
Don't forget to leave us a review in iTunes if you haven't yet. The show notes will have links to a lot of things that we talked about. And if you're really grateful for the opportunity to listen to this free podcast for the bazillion years that we've been doing it, Sarah and I would love for you to shop through the links on the sidebars of our blogs. You're probably really bored of hearing this stuff at the beginning and end of the show. So if you didn't listen to it for the first time today, listen to it again next week because it's updated. Cool. Well, thank you, ladies and listeners. We will be back again next week with who knows what, maybe a diabetes show. Actually, no, we do have a scheduled show for next week, and I know what it is. So I think we're planning on doing a school age show, and I'll be revealing the project that we've been working on, the top secret project. And interestingly enough, my oldest child actually requested to do a show to talk about back to school. So hopefully we'll be able to pull all that together and give you some fun, exciting podcast next week. It's never boring here on the Paleo View.
No, we like to mix it up.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I follow you on Instagram. I follow both of you on Instagram.
Thank you. I follow you.
Aw, it's a big
follow. I follow all of you.
I follow all of you.
That's what I do all day. I just follow everyone.
Remember the olden days where, like, if you were driving and you hit a red stoplight and then you just had to, like, sit there and think about stuff? Like, you don't have to do that anymore. You just grab the phone and be like, what's on Instagram for 20 seconds?
And then your kids yell at you because they've seen the commercials and they're like, you're not supposed to touch your phone when you're driving.
And then I keep saying, I'm not driving. It's a stoplight.
I'm like, mommy has to multitask. That's terrible. I'm sure this is going in the bloopers. So for the record, yes, that's still unsafe and not advised, but I did break the habit of looking while I'm physically driving, or at least I've attempted to. So stoplight.
You just say, I broke the habit. Well, at least I've attempted to. Because that basically means you haven't broken the habit, but you did at least put some effort into it at one point.
I'm actively putting effort into it.
Yeah, actively putting effort into it is good.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson in college the hard way. I was leaving yoga, and I was in that yoga bliss mode, and I opened up a magazine while I was driving and hit the person behind me, and they hit three more people in front of them.
Oh, jeez.
I wow. know. So cell phones are safer than magazines, apparently.
That is, I think, the take-home lesson from that story is it's better to read cell phones than magazines in a car when you're driving.
Yeah, or don't drive. Under the influence of yoga.
Go ahead.
What are we doing?
We're re-recording the intro because I am now a New York Times best-selling That's so dorky.
That is what we are. We are dorky.